Grab a chip and a chair. It's time for the Best Bet Poker Show on 1010XL. 92.5 FM, brought to you by the Best Bet Poker Rooms at Jacksonville and Orange Park. Now, the Best Bet Poker Show pals.
Happy Hump Day!
Woo-hoo! Yeah.
Hump Day!
Oh, yeah.
Hump Day!
Welcome to the Best Bet Poker Show. Allie McDill here with Jesse the Boss.
Woo-hoo! Yeah.
Dustin the Great.
Woo-hoo!
Oh, that's right.
And Country.
Hump Day!
Welcome to the Best Bet Poker Show. We got a great show for you guys tonight. So many fun and exciting things that are happening around the poker world. We have Eric Seidel picks up his ninth WSOP gold bracelet. We're going to talk about that.
True goat.
Yeah, a true goat. We're going to talk about whether or not you guys have heard of a bing bong dealer.
You never heard of a bing bong dealer?
Yeah, so we're going to talk about that because that sounds like a lot of fun. And then, of course, we have some giveaways and probably some hands to deconstruct as we go along. But so I have to tell you guys, or let me ask you a question. Tell me something that you hate to do that is a minor thing. Do you have something that you're just like, God, if I never had to do that again? But like a minor thing, not like, oh, I don't want to work, or just like it's an insignificant thing that shouldn't be a big deal, but if you never had to do it again, it would make you so happy.
Like folding clothes?
Like folding laundry? Okay.
That was my exact same answer.
Yeah. Was that going to be your answer? Do you know what mine is?
Putting away laundry. It's not like putting it in the washer and into the dryer is fine. It's the putting it away part.
It's the putting it away. Yeah, see, that doesn't bother me so much. I think maybe I just do it all the time. So I kind of go into autopilot.
I know what yours is.
What is it?
Getting gas.
Yes, it's putting gas in my car. I swear, I am like, if you never see McDeal at a gas pump ever again, it means that I have totally made it in life, because I will pay somebody to put gas in my car no matter what. And I don't even mind, like, I'll pull it up to the gas. I just hate the act of putting gas in my car. It drives me nuts, right? And so when something else happens to my vehicle, right, I'm always like, ah, it means I got to service my car. So today, as I'm driving in, I get a light that goes off that tells me, you know, I need to get an oil change. And then like 15 seconds later, ding, the light goes off and tells me I need gas again. So if somebody needs a buy-in to the 2-2 game, you can come to the station and take my car and fill it up for me. No, so laundry. You guys are boys, of course. That's your answer.
I don't mind. Gas doesn't bother me so much.
I don't know, I just hate doing it. It's just the act of, like, it's not a big deal. It's not like it's hard. I just don't like to do it. It drives me nuts. All right, so how about this? Card Player does a podcast called Poker Series, right? And they have people on pretty regularly, have lots of guests. And one of their recent guests was Joe Stapleton. So you guys know who Joe Stapleton is, right? He's a writer for Card Player. He's done a bazillion different things. And they did an interview with him. And some of the highlights of the interview that he did, one of the things that he talked about was the new film, the new poker film or gaming film that's coming out called The Card Counter, that's released on September 10th. So that's coming up. And I was excited to hear about that, as he was a consultant for that film. So as I'm looking through the different things that are in this particular podcast, it goes through and it's, you know, it starts talking about random things like stumbling into a Full Tilt meeting, tagging along for an internship, blowing off Jordan Peele, a strong nudge from Bobby Lee, going into a comedy store, right? Scoring in London, mini golf, like all these things. And then it says spotting bing bong dealers. Okay. I had to back up and reread it three times because I thought I was misreading what it said. First of all, what is a bing bong dealer? Have you ever heard of that? Have you ever heard that term, bing bong?
You don't know what a bing bong dealer is?
A bing bong dealer? I don't.
Serious?
Like, you're just trying to say it without laughing.
I have
it's
no idea.
Hard
I can't
for
do
me
it.
To do.
I can't
idea. Do it.
Like, it's hard. It, like, one of my favorite parts about this article is it, like, throws it kind of in the middle and then it keeps going. So it's like, spotting bing bong dealers, 2-4 limit with Oscar Isaac in Biloxi. I'm like, wait. Let's go back to the bing bong dealers. So, of course, the first thing I do is consult the Google machine and I find nothing, right?
There's nothing on the Google machine?
Nothing about a bing bong dealer. The only thing I could find about bing bong is that it's a nonsense phrase that was used by Donald Trump. And so this phrase literally means nothing. It's like a gibberish phrase.
Bing bong, bong,
and
bing,
it became bong, something in 2015 when he used it during a speech, one of his addresses.
Did he say, hold on, excuse me, I got to go consult my bing bong dealer?
No, he goes on and he says, Jeb Bush or Hillary or one of these politicians, all controlled by lobbyists and special interests and donors, people like me from the previous months, total control. Bing bong, bong bong, bing bong. You know what that is, right? That's a quote from Donald Trump. So somehow Joe Stapleton,
so how does Joe Stapleton using
uses
it in context?
That in context with spotting. Well, first of all, he's looking for a bing bong dealer. So what does that mean? Just like a dealer that doesn't know how to deal?
I guess.
I mean, if you were to have to try to, like, I feel like we're all going to have to go listen to Joe Stapleton's interview now. I need to know more about.
We got
to
send a tweet at him or something. Explain bing bong dealer.
I need to know more about that.
I need a visual. I'm going to need pictures. I need a visual.
I feel like I also do as well. And I also want to hear about the card counter.
It looks awesome.
Yeah, it does look
it
awesome.
Looks awesome.
I sent Justin a clip. I don't know if you've
seen it before.
Oh, that's
the name
before,
of the movie?
That's the name of the movie.
I saw
the
trailer.
The trailer looks really fantastic.
It looks pretty good, yeah.
If you guys are watching the stream on Twitch, Justin, I'll throw it in the chat and you guys can check it out if you haven't already found it, but it looks really fun.
It does look good. I think Joe Stapleton had posted something a while ago and I watched the teaser or the trailer and I thought, wow, that actually looks like a pretty good movie.
The premise of the movie is it's a former military interrogator who turned professional gambler that grapples with decisions that he's made in the past. So he lives his life in a casino. He learns how to count cards. He learns how to count cards and learns how to play blackjack because he was in prison for a while. And this is not, like, I'm not spoiling anything. This is all be in the trailer if you watch it. So that's effectively the basis of the show. So there's a lot of...
That would actually be an odd, good use of your time if you were in prison to learn how to count cards.
That's exactly what I thought.
Yeah, for sure.
In fact, when I heard that, I was like, huh, I wonder if that's a thing.
When I first started dealing poker, when we were on breaks, myself and another guy, we decided we want to learn how to count cards. So when we were on breaks, we would count cards, learn how to count cards to play blackjack.
Mm-hmm. How'd that work out?
Pretty good. Actually,
nice.
I did pretty well. We learned, you know, we would just sit there and just go through the deck and then stop and try to predict the last, you know, 3 or 4 cards.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Here's a really fun fact. If you tell people that you play poker, the first question they ask you is if you
can you count cards?
Yeah, yeah. You're the only one out of the three of us that I think could probably say yes.
That's right. Yeah. As a poker player, I can count cards.
Yeah, that's the first question that anyone ever asks. If you say, I play poker, and they say, cool. Can you count cards?
Yeah. Yes. And then the follow-up question is, does that make you a good player or a bad player?
Yeah. You know, when I took a trip to Vegas after I started playing poker, and I was in a poker game, and I was all excited because I was going to Vegas, and I was going to play in the 10-20 limit hold'em game at the Mirage, and this was a big deal, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm so excited. And this guy who was an old-time hustler, River Rick, great guy, learned a ton from this guy. He says,
River Rick,
so when you go, you sit down. Doesn't matter what your first two cards are. You just pick them up, and you scrape them across the table, and you go, hit me.
I remember you telling me that, I feel like.
And then just look really dumb, and everybody would say, what? Oh, wrong table. Oh, okay, so what are we doing here? There you go, and then you take it from there.
And then from there, away you go, hit me. I'm all in. Well,
I'm all in.
In the movie The Card Counter, they do show... in the trailer, the official trailer, they show a lot of scenes where the gentleman is sitting at the poker table. A lot of shots at the WSOP. He takes a shot, buys into the main event. So there's a lot of poker that's involved. In fact, I feel there's more poker involved in the movie than there was blackjack. Don't you agree, Dustin, in terms of...
At least in the trailer, it appeared
that
way.
In terms of watching
the trailer. In the trailer, when it said the card counter, I was like, oh, man, what am I in for, like another 21 movie? And
yeah,
then
that's
right. Every other scene was like a poker scene, and I was like, maybe I was wrong.
Yeah.
Looks awesome.
And maybe those are the only poker scenes. Maybe we saw all the poker.
We saw all the poker in the movie.
Exceptional marketing to the poker community. In fact, if that is the way that they created the trailer. All right. Eric Seidel wins his 9th WSOP bracelet. Pretty impressive.
Sick.
It's impressive to win a bracelet. It's more impressive to win 2 bracelets. And obviously, it's highly impressive to win 9 bracelets. Eric Seidel is 61 years old now. I remember when he was in his prime years of poker playing, right? Prior to the poker boom, like before Moneymaker. I think, or like maybe right around that time.
He was top of the money list for a long time.
Before
everybody was winning all these high rollers and stuff.
Right.
I mean, he was playing all the highest, biggest tournaments also, but he was on top for a long time.
Well, then he was second for a long time when Negreanu took the title of most cashes or most money earned. Seidel was second forever. It was always Seidel.
I feel like it made, like, it was more impactful, right? It was a bigger deal to be sitting on the top of the money list 10 years ago, 15 years ago. It was way bigger of a deal then than it is now because you could go from having literally no tournament winnings whatsoever to being at the top of the list by winning one huge event, right? Where like the top prize is like $25 million. It throws you into the top so quickly that money can shift and adjust. Where before you had to, I mean, it was a major ordeal. If you won $25 million in tournament earnings, that was hard to do.
Right. It took a long time.
It took a long time. I mean, you play a lot of tournaments. You had to win a lot of tournaments. And so I feel like it meant a little bit more in terms of being at the top, especially for the amount of time that he held first place on that chart. But yeah, he's a tremendous player. But he won this bracelet playing online, which is pretty crazy.
Which is what's so amazing about it. He's a live player, not an online player.
Right. He's 61 years old, and he predominantly played all of his poker in a casino. Live poker, not online poker. And it is different. I mean, there's a huge difference between playing that style.
And I don't even think this is listed yet, but if you look him up on GPI, the Global Poker Index, he's $37 million in all-time money.
Wow.
Yeah, that's amazing.
And that's not including the $900K is a drop in the bucket at that point.
Right, no, not including
that. I mean, he just won, it was the 10K buy-in, and he won over $977,000.
And I mean, he's in rounders. Like, does it get any cooler?
Yeah, right. Yeah, I forgot about that. Oh my gosh. I did. Yeah, I forgot about that. That is cool.
Second place, Johnny Chan.
That's right. I forgot about that.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, congratulations. Shout out to Eric Seidel.
He's a really nice guy. He is exactly what you think of him, right? He's quiet. Mm-hmm. Doesn't say a whole lot at the table. He sits there. He talks to people. He's nice.
Mm-hmm.
I have played with him in just tournaments and satellites and stuff in Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
And he just plays, perfect poker. Just sit there and make good decisions. Nothing flamboyant, nothing crazy.
No FPS.
I heard he's a big Beastie Boys fan, and I respect that.
Yeah, how can you not respect
that?
That's amazing.
Yeah, kind of caught me off guard too, but I could see it.
Wow.
Yeah.
I love that, yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
That's funny.
I'm a big Beastie Boys fan.
Who isn't?
Right.
Let's be honest. All right, we're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to talk about optimal pre-flop poker play. Why is that so important? I'm certain we have some hands that we're going to pull apart. That and more. Stay with us. We'll be right back with more of the Best Bet Poker Show on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
You're listening to the Best Bet Poker Show on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Yes.
Yeah, I like it.
Nailed it.
Good job, country. A little Sabotage.
I love it.
Nailed it.
Welcome back to the Best Bet Poker Show. I love the Beastie Boys. Country, you are awesome. Thank you for playing that for us.
Odd trivia fact, the original rap, first rap artist, original rappers were
the Beastie Boys.
The Beastie Boys.
I love that.
You don't think so? Everybody out there?
Consult the Google machine.
Consult the Google machine.
Oh, the keyboard warrior's about to be on fire.
Yes, it truly is.
Keyboards are about to be smoking.
Fire it up. Prove me wrong. Good luck.
There's going to be an article in the New York Times tomorrow about like the number one Googled word or Googled phrase was who
original
was the first
rap artist.
Original rap artist.
Prove the boss man wrong.
Yeah. All right. So let's talk a little bit about optimal pre-flop strategy and play and why it's so important, right? Because as we talked about Eric Seidel winning a bracelet, he's 61 years old, and we talk about the height of his, you know, I mean, I don't know if it's the height of his poker career, but when he was really in his prime was 30-ish years ago,
probably,
25,
yeah.
30 years ago, right? Right before, during, and around the moneymaker era, right? And poker has changed drastically. And it used to be the case that when we would talk about playing pre-flop poker, people would give up equity and play at a slight disadvantage if they knew they could outplay their opponent on later streets. And that sort of became the norm, right? Because poker was followed by, right? There's like
that's
one
a more,
book.
That's, I would say, more recently.
I think that that's like
trend.
An old school strategy.
That's an old, I mean, I guess it's not.
I don't think that that works now. Like, you can't do that as much now because people are too savvy. You run into too many players that know how to play post-flop poker. Used to be the case that everybody was just like, okay, we know
sure.
what to start with. These are our ranges. Here's what we start with, playing pre-flop. And then after the flop came, if they didn't make their hand, they didn't know what to do. So you just bet and they would fold. So it gave you an advantage to call light. And so I think people would say, all right, well, this is probably not a great spot to be putting in chips pre-flop, but my opponents I'm playing against, I'm getting a lot of value post-flop.
Right.
And so that was...
The 8-5 suited start looking real good.
Yeah,
the
so that sort of became, became the norm and the argument for the way people were playing, giving up value pre-flop to gain it on later streets. But I don't think that that's the case so much anymore because, again, so many people have become savvy in terms of playing poker. And to find somebody that is so completely oblivious to the game that they only know how to play pre-flop strategy is very, very rare. I mean, you can study now. There's so many books.
Sure. I mean, it's kind of your starting point, right?
First,
you have to know, you have to start with a pre-flop strategy.
Of course. But most people, their strategy doesn't end there. And there's an abundance of information that you can obtain now through the internet. If you're a brand new beginning poker player, you can get more information in an hour of sitting studying now than you could in probably 3 months, 30 years ago.
Right? I agree. Yeah, that's a really good point.
So like that information wasn't readily available. People couldn't figure it out the way that they can today. So you don't have people running all of these solvers and getting all of this information that tell you how to play optimal poker. Right. And so that has changed the face of poker so that that type of strategy doesn't necessarily work. So your pre-flop poker play should be first and foremost what you think about, I feel like, right, in terms of when you're going to start playing and how to make sure that you don't have any leaks in that particular part of your game, which seems strange because it's such a large piece of your game. But there are parts that you break into that. So to make sure that you're playing optimal pre-flop poker, Dustin, what would you say some of the most important things to consider would be?
So some of the biggest mistakes that I see continually when it comes to preflop is one, being too risk adverse with your really strong hands. And what I mean by that is I see a lot of people limping with hands that are very, very clear ranges from any spot at the table. Hands as strong as ace 10 suited, you know, hands as strong as king, queen offsuit, stuff like that. Those could be raises from basically any position you know, there's a few factors, but
so playing too tight.
Yeah, being really risk adverse. They think like, mm-hmm. oh, you know, I don't want to raise this hand and miss the flop and put myself in a weird spot later. And the other big mistake that I see a lot of players make is they don't have enough coverage on certain boards and runouts because they don't have a bottom to their preflop range. It's kind of falls in the same category, but if the board comes like all low connected cards, mm-hmm. a lot of players are just not going to have a lot of those hands. You know, mm-hmm. like the 4-5s and the mm-hmm. three fours and the 6-7s. Like a lot of players just don't open those hands, and so they don't have coverage on a lot of boards and runouts. And you can really punish those players.
So what you're saying is a lot of players, their preflop range, raising range
is very tight.
Is very tight, too so tight. That it only consists of even at the lowest end face cards, medium pairs or higher.
Yeah,
right.
Face cards.
Their range is too small.
Aces. So when the board does come 3-4-5,
they have no coverage. They have pocket nines or they have no hand.
Right. They never have any of that other than potentially an overpair.
Sometime, every once in a while, they'll call you with ace deuce and they might flop the wheel, but almost never. But yes,
right.
Exactly. So
that was a good example, though. Ace deuce. Yeah.
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 So not opening with a wide enough range,
right.
not coming in with a wide enough range and then playing too tight against players who are already opening or players who are raising.
Right. They just have no merge. So it's super polarized. They have limps where they limp everything in the middle, and then they have their strong hands that they mm-hmm. raise.
And then, of course, you have the opposite side of that, which would be playing entirely too loose, which would be having your range entirely too wide.
Right.
So you have the opposite end of what we just discussed. Three betting frequency, I think that's important, right?
Yep.
Like when you look at if you're only three betting with a very specific range of hands, then you're playing – then it's polarized, right? Like your hands wide open. You might as well just turn your cards face up before you three bet because everybody already knows what you have. So making sure that you balance the frequency of when and where you three bet, I think, is very important also.
Yeah, there's some factors to consider there too. Stacked up being a big one.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you should be three betting either like a polarized range, which means only value hands and only bluffs. And then as stacks get deeper, you can start mixing in some mergier hands, like the middle type hands, like the suited connectors and stuff like that. Just
right.
mm-hmm.
the hands that you're not really supposed to have. But people, they just don't do that. It's mm-hmm. just, it's only the top of their range.
If you're playing.
It's also remember, I think that an important thing to tag on to what Dustin just said is one of the things that people forget about is squeeze plays are a great thing to adjust and widen your three bet range.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Because a squeeze play, if we know how to implement a squeeze play properly, there's a lot of times where you let that go because you're not paying attention. But if you're like, hey, I really need to increase the range of my three bet, start throwing some squeeze plays in there because that's going to obviously
right,
gonna
have a
that.
High frequency right. of taking down the pot right there.
Exactly.
Yeah,
but, you know, and to your point, Dustin is correct. Most people in your everyday, ordinary, average 2-5 game have a extremely minimum tight three bet range,
mm-hmm.
right? Like to the point where it consists of about four hands.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Literally.
Which is incredibly exploitable because you know I like to play a lot of hands and I'm action. I like to see a lot of flops, but the guy that never three bets me, just if he three bets me, I'm gonna fold
You're
out.
You're just folding like almost 100% of the time.
Yeah,
right?
I'm gonna fold out.
Right, and you have to because they have aces, kings, queens, maybe ace, king suited.
Right.
And that's it. That's it.
They just never do it.
Right.
Right. I think the other big spot where has been time and time since the history of poker, the beginning, and will probably be this way until the end, is the defending of the blinds.
Yeah, that's a big argument.
A tricky spot, defending
yeah.
of the blinds.
Yeah.
The frequency of defending the range based on the opponent. Like there's so much that's intricate in the defending of the blind. And again, that means when somebody late position is raising and that's it, they're raising in an attempt to steal your blind. How often are you supposed to defend there? And it obviously is drastically dependent on several things. A, the player first and foremost, right? The person who's the lady or the gentleman who is on your right that is putting this pressure on you. Stack depth is super important also.
Yeah.
Right? And those are the two biggest things.
It also matters if you're playing in a cash game or a tournament, right?
Of course.
In a cash game, you don't really have to defend too much. Your the amount of money you have in the blind is fairly meaningless.
Sure.
In a cash game.
Yeah. Right.
To over defend just to, you know, quote, protect your money is mm-hmm. a mistake in a cash game. Just let it go. You're gonna have a better position in one or two hands.
It's like a half a percent of your stack.
Right. It really means nothing.
It means almost nothing.
In a tournament and with Annie's, it's a little bit different. Then you have to start to implement some of those pushback strategies where you have to three bet people so they don't constantly raise and steal your blinds. Because mm-hmm. in a tournament, if you're in the big blind and everybody folds to you and you get a walk, that is actually a really big win.
Right.
In a tournament to pick up
free roll an orbit.
Right. To free roll a whole entire orbit. So because of that, if it's folded around to the button in a tournament, they're frequently going to raise with any two cards. And you can't just let that go all the time out of your big blind. You have to stop them from doing that so that next time they say, well, I don't want to raise with this raggedy hand. I might get three bets. So whatever, they fold and you pick up the orbit. Mm-hmm. But in a cash game, it's really meaningless.
So do you think that based on what you just said, boss, do you think that it's easier to defend from the small blind because you actually have a person in between you? So three betting, do you feel like three betting is a little bit easier if you're in the small blind position?
It makes your hand look stronger.
Makes your hand look stronger,
yeah.
Just based on where you're sitting, even though you're still out of position.
Right,
but
you have the absolute worst position. There's still a player to act on your left. Mm-hmm. So it definitely makes your hand appear stronger if you three bet out of the small blind.
So if you're trying to make, if there's a guy that's picking on you, right, basically when you're in the blinds and you can see the guy's doing the same thing, the guy on the right's doing the same thing, he's raising in the blind position against you and you see it happening, right? Do you wait until you're in the small blind to take a stance and just be like, you're going to commit to a hand if it happens and you say, okay, I'm going to commit this stand, I'm going to three bet, like, it doesn't matter what I have. I'm not going to look. I'm going to take a stance. I'm going to implement this here just to try to shut down some of the, you know, do you feel like that works better from the small blind position or it doesn't matter?
I don't think it matters.
Okay.
I mean, it does look stronger from the small blind position. Definitely. Yeah.
Dustin, what do you think?
I think it kind of depends on where you actually feel like your edge is. Like, if you think you have a strong edge post-flop, because a lot of times they're not going to fold from late position. So three mm-hmm. betting from the small blind, you're going to have to take a lot. You're going to have to take less post-flop spots. But if you think you have a massive edge post-flop, then you could flat a lot. But
sure,
the big blind's going to get a really good price. And so now you're going to have to play a multi-way pot out of position. That's why, like, conventional poker theory says small blind should be like kind of like fold or three bet. Should mm-hmm. be almost no flats.
Sure.
That's the hardest spot. I think that's the harder spot to play is the small blind. The big blind, you close the action, so you can do whatever you want.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, you get a couple plays out of the, like, just take the big blind, for example, or if you're going to make a play on the guy, you say, all right, I'm tired of his, he's raising me every time. You have a couple choices. I mean, obviously you can fold, but you have a couple choices to sort of stop his action and retake control. You can three bet mm-hmm. with the intention of continuing the aggression on the flop, or you can flat and check raise. Regardless of the flop. I mean, I say regardless, but certain flops you just can't. It just won't work. But
sure.
Basically, those are your plays.
With your intent, right?
You three bet and bet the flop, or you flat and check raise the flop. And what you really should do is both, right? You do one, and then if the guy continues, you wait for a while, you follow up, you do the other one.
Mm-hmm. I like it.
Yep.
All right. That's all your pre-flop important strategy that we have for you. We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, I'm sure we have a hand that we need to pull apart. Plus, we have a $50 tournament voucher that we need to give away. That and more. Stay with us. We'll be right back with more of the Best Bet Poker Show on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
You're listening to the Best Bet Poker Show on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Welcome back to the Best Bet Poker Show. Allie McDeal here with Jesse the Boss, Dustin the Great, talking all things poker. All right, so we have a couple hands to talk about. If you missed the last segment, we were talking about playing pre-flop, your pre-flop strategy and why it's so important and how some of the old school ways of thinking in terms of, you know, giving up some value and equity pre-flop to gain it back post-flop is not really so much the best way to approach the game anymore. Just due to the vast amount of information and knowledge that players have their hands on, and, you know, their database is larger and people are becoming more savvy in terms of playing poker. So they're better at playing post-flop poker.
Also, you know, the older than old school, pre that old school, people basically school. Just, they're
beginning school.
Yeah, their opening pre-flop strategy was to just to have a better hand than everybody else.
Right.
It was just that simple. So If people were just calling and you had a good hand, if people were calling, they probably didn't have a good hand. So if you had a good hand, you could raise. You probably have the best hand. Give you the best chance to win the pot, making the best hand, and therefore you should raise. If somebody raised ahead of you, if you knew that they were a player that only played premium hands, you would pretty much fold everything. If they were a little bit loose, you would, you know, call or re-raise if you just felt like your ace-queen is a better hand, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it was just that simple. It's nothing like that now, and that's not the way you should play. You know, there's no, that's not good.
Poker has evolved entirely too much for that to be
successful. That's not good poker theory. I will say this. If you're a beginning players, your pre-flop strategy should be very sound and fairly tight. Don't play too many hands pre-flop. If you're a beginning player, start out slow and keep to the very tight side and do not have a very big range till you get comfortable.
So, and I agree with that. And so one of the things that we talked about also in conjunction with that is squeeze playing, three betting, right? And so one way to increase that is through a squeeze play. So let's talk about this particular hand, which is a squeeze play spot. So let's say you have the 7-8 of clubs. And a guy opens and they're in early position. You're on the button and you feel like you can get both the blinds to fold and the original raiser, right? This is what a squeeze play looks like. So in this particular situation, you have a guy who raises, okay? And one guy raises, another guy flats. You're on the button and you have the two blinds. You three bet, you open, and you get called in three spots. Okay. So you're playing 2-5. Everybody has about 1K behind them. And the flop comes. Now, excuse me. You try to squeeze from the blind because you're out of position. So I apologize. You're squeezing from the blind. You're out of position. So you have 7-8 of clubs, and the flop comes King-4-6. With two spades. So you completely miss.
Sounds to me like you smashed it. You have you have 7-8 of clubs?
You have 7-8 of clubs.
Okay. Sorry, I thought you said spades.
So it comes King-4-6.
Sure.
Two spades.
Yep.
And there's a diamond. So two spades and a diamond.
So you got a three out to a straight.
So in a situation like this, we talk about playing great pre-flop poker. So now we've backed ourselves into a spot where we try to implement a squeeze play. We don't get it through. It now has changed the frequency of our three bet, which is great. We have a valuable hand, but we completely miss the flop. What do we do now?
It's a great spot for a down bet.
I agree with that. That's exactly what I say. It's a great spot
for a down bet. I hate three betting there.
So let's say there's 120 in the pot.
First of all, I think that's a horrible three-bet play. Horrible.
Okay, well.
It's just a waste of money. You're just throwing away. If you're three-betting out of the blind with a 7-8 of clubs like that, you're just throwing away money.
Okay. I don't hate it when everyone's
If you're trying deep. To squeeze, yeah. I don't hate it, but we can talk about that in terms like we've already made the mistake, but so now we need to carry on with the hand. So what do we do now in terms of if you feel like it's a mistake? Yeah, as played.
I like a down bet there. I think that's. I think if you check, you leave it open to, you know, bets, raises, too big of bets. You know, you don't want to just give up. You have a three card straight draw, basically. You know, four, but you give up the flush. So
it would be super weird to three bet out of position and have check. The flop come king high and check. I feel like that would be weird. I feel like it's a perfect board to bet on because the board's not super coordinated, right? I mean, there is a flush draw out there. There's two spades out there. But other than that, it's not super connected for anybody that's in the hand with a three bet. So I think taking a stab at it with a king high flop is not a terrible idea. And I do like down betting to control the pot size and to not just give up and check and let your hand be wide open. So if we're going to down bet, what do you say? There's 120 in the pot. What are we looking to bet here?
I would go, 50. I'd go around 40.
I was going to say like 40.
45. Yeah. I would go 40, like 30% 40. Pot in this spot.
Yeah. So we're between like 40 and 50. Yeah. Okay.
It's going to give any of the flush draws that are still in the hand a really good price to continue, but also we can navigate that on future streets.
Yep. I agree. So we don't know what happens, right? Because the hand goes south, person makes a mistake and decides they're going to check.
And you know,
and they give up their hand. And now they're stuck in a situation where somebody bets and just have to fold. So you're basically just check giving up. So you're like, I'm going to try to implement a squeeze play. I didn't get it through with my three bet. And now I'm just going to check fold on the flop. What I don't like about that is I feel like if you do something in that situation, because we're talking about now, we're going to kind of back this into the pre-flop play. If you are making a three bet and you're just check folding on the flop, the frequency of you getting called when you three bet pre-flop is going to drastically change.
Yeah, it's a very bad image play to check fold there, which is makes it even more.
On that particular board.
Yeah, you need
on
to
that
bet.
Particular board. I feel like that's a train wreck. So consider that also.
Well, it's also a really good board for your range as a three-better. You can have all the kings. Agreed. You can have all the aces. You can have all the ace-king.
Agreed.
You can have some king-queen.
Yeah, yeah, it's not a bad board.
It's a great board.
It's a fantastic board. Unfortunately, you should be betting 100% of the time there.
Yeah, your exact hand doesn't block much that your opponents would continue with, which is part of the problem, which is why I would say a down bet versus a check raise.
Correct.
But it's a great bet. You have to bet the board. You have to bet that board 100% of the time. Yeah. The only question is sizing.
I agree.
Yeah, I like it.
And also, you still have equity when called, which is a huge thing when deciding on what boards to continue with. So you still have some equity. It is only three outs, possibly four, but still.
Mm-hmm. Right, three, equity. Possibly four. Or the person that calls, you might not have a pair. They might just have a flush draw.
Also true is, you can go bet on clean runouts.
Right, you can backdoor a pair and you know, end up go check on the river and win that way.
Yeah, that'd be good. I like it. Okay, Dustin, I know you had a hand. So that was we had a partial hand, but I thought it was important to kind of throw in there since we had just been talking about.
My hand's kind of a partial hand too. My hand has more to do with one thing that I think is important that we didn't really touch on with preflop stuff. It's about formation. And it kind of ties into what you said earlier. And what I mean by formation is where specific people are in the hand. So this hand is a really good player to my right. I'm in early position, I'm under the gun plus two, and there's a really, really splashy player on the button. So that's the formation. So that should affect your preflop decision as well. Like what hands...
The good player's on your right, is that what you said?
The good player's on my right.
On your right, okay.
And the splashy player's on the button.
Okay.
So formation should always, like who's in the blinds, who's in the button, who's still left to act. If this guy raises and I three bet, you know, and this guy calls in between, is it going to open stuff back up? So formation is a big part of preflop also.
Huge. I mean, that's a very good point. That's a huge, huge piece of what hands you enter. Yeah. That's why you can't say, okay, you're always going to enter in, you know, three off or in the hijack with the king queen if it's, you know, one opener or something like that, because it's not always because you don't know the formation of the hand.
I have a student who always says to me, they'll text me something and it will not have anywhere near enough information.
That's so tilting.
Right. And I just go, it depends.
Yeah.
And they get they'll text and then they'll like text me. They go, let me guess. It depends. And I go, it does depend. I'm like, there's first of all, there's a lot of things that are missing. Number one, I was like, and number two, We got to talk about the rest of the things before we can say, you know, make a decision.
Right. Some people never give up their big blind.
Yeah, they don't.
Right.
And some people always give up their
big blind. And that ties into formation.
Yep.
Right.
Formation. All right. So back to the hand, Dustin. So splashy guy on the button, good player on your right.
Yep. So the good player opens under the gun, early position. And we looked down, we have Jack 8 suited, right? We have Jack 8 of clubs, which is normally pretty much a fold for me. But we look up and the splashy player is on the button. So now we have a chance. We are going to be out of position, but the splashy player just doesn't fold any pair. Mm-hmm. So now we have a chance to play in position against the good player and also a pot with the splashy player. So we call with the Jack 8 of clubs. The flop comes and the splashy player calls. Yeah, so the flop comes King 8 4 rainbow. Good player bets out for half pot. I call, splashy player calls. Turn comes, we call middle pair, he bet half pot. I kind of feel like he has a king, but the splashy player is still in. He only bet half pot, we get a good price. So turn comes Jack, we make two pair. Rainbow board, pretty easy. Really good turn. Mm-hmm. He checks, I check. Unfortunately, splashy player checks. The river comes.
The river comes. Bet your own hand,
Yeah, the river comes like a six. And the good player leads out for 85. I call 85, and the splashy player kind of thinks for a second, says, well, you know, whatever, I call too. And the splashy player calls.
Juicy.
Good player has king-queen offsuit. We have jack-8 suited for two pair, and the splashy player looks totally defeated and shows king-3 offsuit. So the moral
for
of the story.
One pair.
For one pair. But we got that extra.
The moral of the story is, yeah, again, that pre-flop, playing that optimal pre-flop and understanding and having the awareness of position and players and your entire situation is
and sucking out
all very, very important.
Yeah. Yeah, we suck out. But,
I know, love it.
Sometimes you get lucky.
And sometimes
they had
you
each other's
suck
blockers.
Out
they
works.
Both had top pair. They had each other's blockers.
All right, we need to take our final break, but when we come back, we will talk all things promotions and put a wrap on the show. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
It's the Best Bet Poker Show on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Welcome back to the Best Bet Poker Show. Alan McDeal here with Jesse the Boss, Dustin the Great, wrapping up the program. All right, as promised, we got that $50 tournament voucher that we are going to give away right now. 641-1010 is the phone number. 641-1010. We'll take the third caller. And you can use that $50 tournament voucher in any of our tournaments at either location, whether it be Jacksonville or Orange Park. It's good for a daily tournament or towards any tournament that is larger than a $50 tournament, if you so choose. There's a tournament this Saturday, in fact, if you'd like to play that $600 tournament. It is a single-day event. It starts at noon. There's a satellite tonight. Starts here in about the next 5 minutes. $140 over in Jacksonville. Registration is open in through about 9 o'clock-ish.
Yep,
so
yep,
the first
about
six levels. 9-10-ish, if you guys want to head over there, $140 satellite tonight into the $600 on Saturday at noon. And again, don't forget, it is a single-day event. There is the $1,500 tournament, which is a two-day tournament. It's mostly a single day, but you'll come back and play the final table next Sunday. So if you're looking to play that $1,500 event, that will be next Saturday. Put it on your calendar. There will be satellites running all week next week to get you into that for a little bit less. Also, the 2-2... There's a 2-2 No Limit Hold'em live stream happening immediately after the show. So don't go anywhere. You can hang out, watch it on Twitch, YouTube, or Facebook. You can get all your other information at bestbetjacks.com. That's going to do it for us tonight, but don't go anywhere. End of the night with Rick Ballew is coming up next. For Jesse the Boss, Dustin the Great, and Country, I'm Allie McDeal saying, until next time, we hope to see you at the final table.